This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Postal workers saved our election and now need our help to prevent their jobs from being killed. To speak with us about postal workers' national protest coming up, we're joined by President of the National Postal Workers Union, Mark Dimenstein. So the 2020 election may be mostly over, but Trump Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's plans to destroy the Postal Service aren't. I wonder if you can address what the takeaway is from the elections themselves and the performance, notwithstanding efforts to sabotage the mail, but the performance of the postal workers that really pulled out this election and the most important election certainly in our lifetime.
Postal workers have been doing vote by mail for generations. We're very proud of it. It's part of our civic duty. And it's become an ever more popular way of voting. A lot of people don't realize in 2016, 25% of the people of the country voted by mail. And we knew in the pandemic, an additional tens of millions of people would even have access to the ballot box in a safe way. So with the slings and arrows on our backs by the highest office of the land saying that postal workers are corrupt and that the election's rigged, postal workers pulled together on a nonpartisan basis and really rose to the occasion. And despite many of the challenges that the mail service is facing with Mr. DeJoy's policies and some other factors, we really rose to the occasion. And I think it's most interesting that because there was a public outcry about the policies that were slowing down the mail, because there was a public outcry about how important the cherished right to vote is, and we want to make sure the Postal Service works right during this election. The PMG himself and management at the highest levels were compelled to take this very seriously, and we had a lot of good cooperative work to make sure that mail ballots actually got the priority that they deserved. And so I think postal workers hold their heads high. Again, we did it. It wasn't a question of what was in those ballots. It was a question of making sure that that voter had their voice heard, that ballot arrived on time, and that ballot was counted.
Do you think there's any possibility of DeJoy carrying out more tactics of sabotage of the mail service in the interim period before the new president is sworn in? Perhaps toward the end of trying to flatten profits in the post office and try to parcel out some of it to the private sector.
Yeah, well, we are very concerned about that. Look, he came in very connected to President Donald Trump, and President Donald Trump and his administration has a stated very clear policy and plan to degrade, dismantle, and then sell off the post office to the private sector, i.e. privatize it. And so we are very concerned when the new postmaster general brings in policies that undermine service, drive away revenue, because it's laying the basis for that end goal, whether conscious or not. Mr. DeJoy himself testified before Congress a month or two ago that he would take care of election ballots. That's important. He would take care of it till November 3rd. That's important. But then he said after November 3rd, I'm going to implement my, quotes, business plan. It's not the United States Postal Business. It's the United States Postal Service. Those are two different things. And it's called the service for a good reason. 160 million addresses every day, no matter who we are and where we live. That's the universal postal mandate and that service to everyone. Now, you raise an interesting question between now and the new president. The new president actually does not and cannot hire and fire the Postmaster General of the United States. That's the Board of Governors that does that. The Postal Board of Governors is in place. They have terms of office. They're going to be there for a while. Now, that what the new president can do and what we hope he does and we expect him to do, and we certainly demand that he does it, is fill the vacancies on the Postal Board of Governors with good, proactive, passionate advocates of a public postal service. So we have some high hopes that the Postal Board of Governors will improve and really work on restoring the promise to the American people under the law, which says prompt, reliable, and efficient services for all communities and to everyone.
Yeah, I thought that the president-elect had carte blanche to remove Postmaster General Louis DeJoy.
No, so this was part of the Postal Service becoming an independent agency in 1970 after the Great Postal Strike. The epicenter was in New York, as you probably know. And it used to be part of the old Post Office Department was a cabinet-level position. The Postmaster General served in the cabinet that was appointed by the president or unappointed by the president. That changed in 1970. And so there's a Postal Board of Governors that those governors are appointed by the president and approved by the Senate. And six of the nine are in place now. And we'll have to get to work quickly to have the other three positions filled, nominated, confirmed, and help get the Postal Service on a much better path.
I wonder if you can put a human face on our postal workers. It's an amazing job, and its origins are incredibly important and one of the few remaining services that has both the longevity and serves all people everywhere in the
right.
U.S. So put that face on. Who are our postal workers, people of color, women, veterans, etc.?
You filled it out some. You know, the postal worker represents the rainbow of the entire country. It's the geographic sweep, the sweep of gender and race and nationality and religion and political affiliations. We are very proud. And because there's much more fair hiring, because there's fair work rules under a union contract, it's a place that people have much more equal treatment. So in the crafts that our largest craft that our union represents is the clerk craft. And the clerk craft, it's majority woman now. We have at least 25-26% of postal workers are African Americans. About 40% of postal workers are considered, quotes, minority. We're the largest employer of veterans outside of the government itself and the civilian side of the military. Almost 100,000 postal workers are veterans. We have long-term workers. We have short-term workers. We have people that do all sorts of work from in the post office, obviously the people you see day in and day out delivering your mail. We have the window clerks at the offices. We have behind the scenes, which I did as a postal worker, sorting during the night so the mail can get to you during the day. We have truck drivers that transport mail. We have mechanics that keep the trucks on the road so that the letter carriers can get to your home, to your apartment. We have IT people that keep the internal guts of the digital age for the post office going. We have maintenance people that keep the machines going, that keep the buildings kept up. So it's the entire gambit throughout the whole country. We have a whole group of employees called rural letter carriers who carry to the most remote place. So we really do represent the rainbow, and I think it's one of the reasons why the post office is so respected and so trusted. People see themselves in postal workers, many family members, much equal opportunity, and we're very proud of the fact that under a union contract, it's equal pay for equal work. Whatever your gender, whatever your nationality, if you're doing the same job, you're getting the same pay and benefits, and that's a wonderful thing for any worker.
Now, the Postal Service is coming under very hard fiscal constraints, both by measures that were passed about a decade ago. They have to pre-fund health benefits for retirees to an extent that no private corporation has to do, but also because of the pandemic, reducing the amount of mail for certain classes. What can be done about this, and what is the union doing about that?
The most immediate financial challenge facing the Postal Service is the impact of the COVID pandemic on the finances of the Postal Service. So first, there's been a huge impact on the life of postal workers and our health and safety. And when you asked earlier about putting a face on a postal worker. What better face is there than during this pandemic being on the front line as essential workers, as dangerous as it is, still out here connecting the people day in and day out. That's how dedicated postal workers are to the mission and to serving the people. But there's been another huge impact, and that's the financial impact. Many of the listeners may not realize that the Postal Service does not run on tax dollars. It runs on the revenue created from postage and postal services. The pandemic has had deep, draconian impact on workers of the United States and all sorts of businesses, and certainly it has an impact on the Postal Service. The Postal Service itself is projecting a $10 billion loss of revenue over the next 10 years just due to COVID, not other factors. So what that means is at some point, if there's not enough revenue coming in, and that's a huge projected loss, then there's not going to be enough revenue to carry out the mission, and something's going to have to give. So the pandemic has put us on a fork in the road, and so the privatizers are shamefully trying to use the pandemic to further squeeze and starve the post office to privatize it. So, for instance, so now before us is the need for Congress to act with true emergency COVID relief, this time taxpayer relief, to get us through this crisis, something that belongs to all of us, to the people of the country. It's not taxpayer relief for CEOs or shareholders. It's for the people of the country. And while the House of Representatives back in March passed $25 billion of COVID emergency relief for the Postal Service, the Senate side was willing to go at least halfway there, if not more. This administration actually said there will be no financial relief, no stimulus package for anybody in this country. And this was a $2.2 trillion package with $500-plus billion to the corporations. They said they will veto it if the post office has any financial relief. So that's people that are trying to shamefully use the crisis to carry out an agenda to degrade, undermine, and destroy the United States Postal Service. The challenge with COVID is still before us. The House of Representatives again has passed $25 billion of relief twice. Even the Postal Board of Governors, on a bipartisan basis, has asked for robust financial relief from Congress to get the Postal Service through this crisis. And that was on a bipartisan basis, and it's a majority Republican board. So we want to build on that bipartisan support and get the stimulus money. Congress will be back in session. We'll see what happens in what they call the lame duck. If it doesn't happen here, then it needs to happen with the new administration. It's not just us. People need the city and states to get the relief. Those are emergency services, clean water, public transportation, and all the many, many, the whole question of sanitation work, all of that. The city and states are also being starved. So we aren't alone. We all need to be taken care of, and we need to get through this crisis together. And again, if they're going to take care of the corporations, let's take care of the people by taking care of the public sector, and it's long overdue for Congress to act.
President Dinenstein, I want to just move back to the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, who was a major Republican donor who Trump handpicked for the Postal Service. Now, the election is over. What are the interests of Mr. DeJoy going forward? Who are his alliances to now, such that he is such a viper in the core's allegiances to him? So that makes him so dangerous to the Postal Service.
We do know that he comes from a philosophy and an ideology where it's all about business. It's all about profit. It's all about enhancing his stocks with other companies that may do postal business. And he certainly is representing an administration that's extremely hostile, and a philosophy that's extremely hostile to the public good. Obviously, he had to be compelled to do the right thing on vote by mail. And now we have to take that and make sure that he understands that he can't come in. He can try, but he can't come in and take a 245-year-plus-old institution that the people of this country support and love and just come in and do whatever he wants to do without a public outcry in response. We'll see if he's learned any lessons. He has said under oath that he plans to implement his policies, and they're basically policies that are slashing, burning, and cutting instead of enhancing and growing. I always tell people, if you want to privatize agency, a public good, you can't do it when 91% of the people of the country support it. To get to there, you have to break that wonderful bond that we have as postal workers in a public service with the people of the country, across the political spectrum, across the geographic spectrum. And the way you try to break that bond is you make it so it doesn't work anymore. You had raised earlier this pre-funding mandate from 2006. That created and manufactured a financial crisis that degraded service. And Mr. DeJoy so far has been on a path of degrading service, which then will undermine people's confidence in the postal system and the postal service. And eventually, if it doesn't work, then eventually people become more susceptible to some other path. Maybe the private sector can do it better. One of the lessons we're drawing from the election mail is this is the way the post office should work for everything. Mail that people are promised on time should be on time. Medicines to veterans, medicines to seniors, financial transactions, e-commerce, the small business world, the birthday cards to the grandkids. All of that needs that same emphasis of service that we brought into the vote-by-mail world. And so we want DeJoy, if he's going to stick around, to do it right.
Who are those corporations that he is allied with that would seem, no matter what, to benefit enormously from the privatization, from the parsing out of the functions of the post office to private entities?
He's a multimillionaire who made his multimillions subcontracting with the Postal Service as a private company. It was called New Breed Leasing. The post office gave away a lot of work that well-paid and unionized postal workers used to do. And what happens with privatization is wages and benefits go down and someone pockets the difference. He pocketed the difference. And he's still closely allied and tied with companies that do a lot of subcontracting with the Postal Service. We believe he still has financial interests. I say it carefully because I don't know what he's divested yet, but he has financial interests with UPS. Look, if the post office is privatized, a few big companies laugh all the way to the bank. One is they get some of the business, and two is the low-cost anchor of the mailing package industry, which is the public side, the public postal service, is then gone if it's privatized. So these package companies who very much want to raise their rates will be able to do so at the expense of the people of the country. So there's a few companies that will do very well if the post office is privatized, but the people will lose. Because if privatization were to ever take place, and if Mr. DeJoy is successful at helping to turn it over to the private sector, the universal service mandate is gone. The small D democratic right of having postal services, no matter who we are and where we live, on a uniform, reasonable rate is gone. And the service we get, if we get it at all and how frequently we get it, will then be based on whether somebody can make a quick buck. Think about this, the whole question of mail ballots. There's no private company that would have made money with the extra effort and the priority treatment that the Postal Service gave to mail ballots. But think about what it did for the people of the country in terms of delivering democracy. So again, it's not a business, it's a service. We turn it into a business and we lose all that. So the private sector companies would certainly make out. The hedge funders on Wall Street would certainly make out. We say just follow the money. Post office takes in $70+ billion a year of postal revenue. And those Wall Streeters want their hands on that money to do whatever they can with it to make a profit. And we want it to stay in the hands of the people and in the service for the people.
The Postal Union is sponsoring demonstrations across the country. Tell us what's going to be happening for the Postal Service and the Postal Workers Union and the workers.
We're having a National Day of Action, and there are press events around the country with a main press event in Washington, D.C. Some will be small. Some will be big. But the message is maybe threefold. One is a great appreciation for postal workers stepping up and delivering democracy for the people of this country. And that underscores the need for a thriving and vibrant postal service going forward. So we need that stimulus money, that stimulus emergency relief for the public postal service in order for that robust service to continue. This is not the last election. We have a holiday season coming up. We have all those wonderful things that we do in relation to the people of the country. So one is an appreciation and a recognition of the role of the post office and postal workers, giving access to the ballot box to 65 million plus people. Two is COVID relief. Congress is back in session. They're talking about stimulus. May or may not happen in the lame duck, but it's got to happen soon, and we need to keep it front and center. So that's the second message. And the third is that the promise to the people of this country under the law is prompt, reliable, and efficient services. And that Mr. DeJoy's policies that are slowing down and delaying mail, undermining service, and driving away revenue need to be permanently reversed, and we need to get back to serving the people the way that they deserve and defining the ways to grow and enhance postal service through more financial services and all sorts of things the Postal Service can and should do. Here's an example. HHS had a plan back in April to send 5 masks to every single person in every single household in this country through the United States Postal Service. Nobody else has that reach. Nobody else goes to every address. It was a plan that obviously now would have saved lives because of the importance of wearing masks, protecting not only other people, but protecting oneself. That plan was kiboshed by this administration, but is an example of the role that the public postal service can play in our lives, of mail ballots, the public health. The third message is that the post office needs to get back on track, it needs to grow, and we need to be here, continue for generations to come, just like we've been for generations past. We're asking everybody to call Congress, but we're also asking everybody, postal workers, family, friends, allies, people that love the post office and use it and need it and respect it, to call their Congress people. The Congress is back in session and urge them to pass the needed $25 billion of COVID postal emergency relief. And folks can go to apwu.org to get the number to call that would patch you right into your elected officials from the area you're from. So we certainly hope everybody will join in. We're stronger together, and together we will prevail.
Postal banking services, which had been abolished in the mid-1960s, please right. Address that.
It's all over the world. Posts all over the world provide deep financial services, sometimes actually all the way to a public bank. Here we have the what they call the unbanked or the underbanked, 80, 90 million people. Billions of dollars of fees lost to hardworking folks going to fees and services and debt. The Postal Service can do check cashing. The Postal Service can have ATMs. The Postal Service can have no-cost debit cards. There's all sorts of basic financial services, even short of a postal bank. We call it under the umbrella of postal banking. But even short of that, it'd be a wonderful thing for the people of the country. It would save working people thousands of dollars a year, the working people that get stuck in this predatory payday lending, check cashing industry that's just ripping us off day in and day out. And here we have a trusted public service in every community from rural America to the urban centers, communities that the banks have essentially pulled out of and have no interest in serving the people anyway. And so we do a lot of financial transactions already. Many of your listeners have probably paid bills with money orders over the years. It's very easy, if there's the will, for the Postal Service to ramp up at least some trials, at least what we call pilot programs, to try some of these new products. And it's a win-win-win. The people benefit, the workers benefit, and the Postal Service without ripping anybody off, brings in some needed revenue. So that's one area, the health and safety issues, the monitoring of roads and air quality that you can put on postal vehicles, the question of getting a more fuel-efficient and green fleet. All of these things are ways that the Postal Service can help enhance the society as a whole. So we're very enthusiastic about some of those services, particularly financial services, and we hope with a new administration that there will be a renewed interest. And no matter who the PMG is, we plan to continue to press. We as the American Postal Workers Union and the people that can do that work, already do some of that work and want to do more of that work, we are going to continue to press hard, because this would be a wonderful thing for the people of the country. And like I said, it's done all over the world, all over the world. It'd be great to have a public option of banking.
Mark Dimenstein, National Postal Workers Union President, thanks for speaking with us.
You've been listening to Building Bridges, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Stay strong and stay well.